trust God that love is everywhere. We are here to be the perfect givers of love and receivers of love, and love will have the final word. Trust love, trust love, trust God that love is everywhere. And we are here to be the perfect givers of love and receivers of love, and love will final word. No one ever loses when one trusts love. Love is something that will not ever fail. Love is the essence of the spirit that is known by always giving. Love always sees the truth beyond the appearance that we show. And love judges not, and love renews. Yes, love renews. Love is a healer. Yes, it is. Love loves to love. Love loves to love. And we'll keep on being love. Yes, we'll keep on being love. This is its holy way. So trust love, trust love, trust God, that love is everywhere. And we are here to be the perfect givers of love and receivers of love, and love will have final word. No one ever loses when one trusts love. For love is something that will not ever fail. Love is the essence of the spirit known by always giving. Love always sees the truth behind the appearance that we show. And love judges not, and love renews. Yes, love renews. Love is your love. Yes, it is. Love loves to love. Love loves to love. And we'll keep on being love. Yes, we'll keep on being love. This is its holy way. So trust love, trust love, trust God that love is everywhere. Receivers of love, and love will have the final word. Oh yes, love will have the final word. Oh yes, love will have the final word. Trust love, trust love. trust God that love is everywhere and we are here to be the perfect givers of love and receivers of love and love.
No one ever loses when one trusts love. Thank you, Takiya. Thank you, Thomas. Thank you, Brother Wainwright. We've missed you. Oh, we are here to be the perfect givers of love and receivers of love. And love will have the final word. You better write, Ricky Byers. Yes, the final word. I am so very grateful for my dear brother Amon, who brought our Resurrection Sunday message. Yes? Well, me and two other people. Apparently. Okay, there were a few more. Yes? All right, y'all didn't know that this was, you have a role in this as well. Yes, I'm not doing all the heavy lifting. Look, it seems to me that Amon challenged us to take off our grave clothes, roll away the stone, and move on. Yes. If you were there, is that what you heard as well? Yes. Yes, yes. So what I love about that, and that, it really stayed with me in a number. I just felt like that particular message could have, I'm kind of a serial preacher myself, so that could have like three or four parts. So I'm just wanting to, would y'all understand if I said kind of tag back? Y'all would understand if I just want to do a little bit of start from where he left off and then kind of move into what's present for me. So this notion of love having the final word, I would offer that the final word is that God created you as itself. That God created you, each one of us, as itself. And what if, just for drill, what if we decided that that was the final word? Bam. God created you, each and every one of us, as itself. Some would say in its own image, in it, whatever words you use, the idea that is you're being left as the final word, that you are divine, that you are created by the Creator, that who you are is whole, is perfect, is complete. That's it. That's the final word. Yes? But this isn't the first time you've heard that. So let's not pretend like, oh my goodness, look at what... This is not the first time you've heard that. This is not news. Uh-uh, leave it there. This is not brand new information. The key is that we are responsible for keeping it fresh. Our job, not part-time, our full-time responsibility is to keep that ever before us. I am whole. I'm perfect. I'm complete. For most of us, if not all of us, that's hard to take in. I mean, it's not hard to say. It kind of rolls off the tongue. I'm whole, I'm perfect, I'm complete. But I mean, say it like you say some of that other stuff that is weighted in consciousness, that you can hardly not think. Does it make sense if I say it like that? That there's that that you have so ingrained in your consciousness. You yourself, not put there by others, but you have repeated it until you've made it real. Whole, perfect, and complete. Impressed on your consciousness in that same way. This is the moment when we just ought to have journals available to pass out to people. Because there's not a one of us that couldn't benefit from journaling just about that. Using journaling as a spiritual practice, as a way to see what's in the way for me truly taking this on. What is already there that can turbocharge this idea? How can I best imprint it on the whole of my life and living? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So look, love resides in you. Because look, this idea, I am as God or love created me, is from A Course in Miracles. It's lesson 94. And one of the ways that I was encouraged to read A Course in Miracles is where it says, for some, and I was, when I was first introduced to it, it was very difficult. So difficult, I was like, I ain't doing this. And I didn't. I put it down, and I picked it up again, and I'm going to try to do it. But and what I found was that for some of us, the language is so challenging. And sometimes even the word God, if we replace, and this is what I often do, is replace the word God with love in A Course in Miracles. So then the idea is that love created me. What? Love created me. Kind of takes my breath away. Can you, now for some, your relationship with God and the way you use that dramatic root word, it works out for you. For some of us though, when we say, love created me, it strikes another chord. So do you. The idea that I'm drawing from, that love created me, all of us, is that love resides in all of us. It would have to. It's the source of our very being. Love resides in us, and what? We reside in love. That's enough to transform your life. What's also present, though, is our egoic mind, this is important, does not know who you are. It don't know you. It doesn't know that love created you. It thinks that you're working in a whole other sphere of truth. That is not so. So the idea here is that your egoic mind also doesn't know the purpose of your life. And that's most often what we're listening to. That's our guidance. I know when we come here on Sunday, we declare other guidance. And that's good that at least for a few moments we would claim divine guidance. But most of the time, For many of us, our ego is guiding us. And I came today to say, it don't even know you. What you riding with it for? It doesn't know you or where you're going. It doesn't know why you're going. It has no idea how you are to go. And yet, we are trusting that. So the idea here that I want to begin with is that it is in our best interest for us to lay aside all images, positive and negative, all self-images, pardon me, all self-images, both positive and negative, because they have come, we have formed them from a lie. I tried to figure out another way to say that, but the truth is we formed it from a lie of who we think we are. So even our positive image of self is not true because it's not nearly sufficiently expansive nor inclusive. Oh, I hope I'm making sense. Yeah? So this is where we it's a get thee behind me moment, ego. I've been rolling with you, and this ain't worked out well for me. So one of my first teacher in this philosophy was Terry Cole Whitaker, who is known for saying, what you think about me is none of my business. Wrote a book about it. Yes, she did. What you think about me is none of my business. True. And one could say that to one's own ego. One could say that as part of one's mirror work. Y'all know we're about mirror work as well, yes? So one could include that in their mirror work. What you think about me is none of my business. You. You who doesn't know the truth of my being. And then I would add, what you think about you is erroneous and cannot be trusted nor relied on. Ouch. But that's pretty much how we've been operating. This is you speaking to you. What you think about me, you're saying to you in your mirror work, what you think about me is most often erroneous. You get it wrong about who I am. We'd all stand taller. The world would be different. The children, no child would go hungry. No senior would be in fear. If we were living our true love, the truth of who we are, that's our calling. That's how we will rise up and roll away the stone. Yeah. Is in knowing the truth. Isn't that how that comes to you sometime? That there is a moment? I remember as a youngster, teenager. And I remember my dad, I'd said something back. That's what it was. I see it now. At first I was like, I'm not sure what happened. Yeah, I am too. He said what he said. And I had a different view. And I felt it. And I had been raised by him, so this wasn't like I didn't know. But I felt strongly about my view of it. And I said so. And I recall that he stepped over. I was sitting down. He stepped over. He was already way taller than I. But he was kind of looming over me. And it was kind of like, what did you say? And something moved in me and I stood up. And I said what I said. Well, I'm here. So I was thinking about, well, how do I express to them? And then I thought, they already know the rest of the story, because this is not my memorial service. And in that moment, my father got it. I don't know what he got. I'm not sure even what I got. Because when I realized I was standing and speaking, at this point, like to his face, I wasn't sure what planet I was on. But there was a truth that was being revealed. I don't know what he saw or what he heard, but I know that it changed our relationship forever. He heard me rather than deferring to what was commonly expressed through parents of that generation, that youngsters were to be seen and not heard. And not seen all the time. Don't get that part twisted. You weren't just supposed to be seen everywhere, always. You were supposed to be seen when we let you come out to be seen. But certainly, even if you were called out, you were not to be heard. But in that moment, something else happened. Because I had a knowing that I cannot describe to you. I can just tell you that it moved me. And it feels like what Aman was speaking of in terms of this rising up, rolling away the stone, and taking off the grave clothes.
Yes.
Yes. I need a journal. Because I'd not thought about that. I certainly hadn't thought to share it. So there's a part of me that like, excuse me, can I just go over here and journal a little bit and then come back? But whoa, because it's like still working on me. But let me tell you what Genevieve Barron says about, she says, thought power is the kingdom of God in us.
Yes.
So I think this is, now I understand why I told that. Thought power is the kingdom of God in us, always creating results in our physical forms, plural, corresponding to our normal sustained thought. Now, no doubt there were many years, many times when I didn't feel worthy, capable, fill in the blank, to stand for myself and say what I was thinking. And instead probably said, yes, Father, yes, sir. I never said yes, sir, but okay, Daddy. Even though it wasn't okay, Daddy. Even though I really had a mind that had other ideas that we might have collaborated around outcomes much greater than what we'd been settling for. I think she's trying to tell us about that. That thought power is the presence of the kingdom of God. So here's the thing. Last week, I was, you know, there was the rally on Easter Sunday, and Ambessa was there with his son. And several of us were, and you know, adults do this all the time. We see the children and we act just like they're not supposed to grow. So we just surprised he not still carrying him around. You know what I mean? And so he had his son with him, and I was just, oh my goodness, we were all, it was like a chorus of, oh, he's gotten so big, and it was all the things. And Ambessa said, just feed and water them and they sprout up. And I thought, you better preach, boy. Because it having no relationship or relevance to the size of children, but that's how life gets to be the way it is. Our ideas, our thoughts, our beliefs, when we feed and water them, they sprout up. And some of us have whole forests of what we don't want. Entire just acres of what we despise, what causes us great pain. And it's because we feed it and we water it. And so Ambessa, it's sure to do what? It'll sprout right up. It will grow everywhere. That ought to answer a question for somebody. Because our specific goals and objectives come to life when we plant and nurture the seeds necessary for that. Thomas Troward says, by your habitual thoughts, not the thought of you winning the lottery. You know, when the number gets high, and we, oh, what I could do with that, that's not a habitual thought. A habitual thought is often best illustrated by the way you refer to yourself, how you see you, what you think you're capable of or not capable of, where you think you can go or not go. Those are more the habitual thoughts. That's where you're engaging your egoic mind about the building on the lie of who you've been saying you are, rather than acknowledging that you're love and being willing to trust that. He says that you create corresponding external physical conditions. Now, if you're really paying attention, you'd be saying, Rev, you already said that. I intended to say it again. You create corresponding, meaning matching, meaning equivalent, physical conditions. This is where the idea of the mental equivalent comes along, because your habitual thoughts are at the mental level. And then we're saying that they correspond, so that's an equivalent external physical condition that matches and is appropriately matched with your thinking. Does this, are we clear about this? Okay. All right, you think it, you get it. As a habitual thought. What you think habitually, which I am relating to what Ambessa said, it's the planting and nurturing, the watering, the feeding of it, that has it then grow as matched. So it's not like you'd planted tomatoes and now you look up and you got broccoli. It's that you may have variations, all kind of hybrid tomatoes, but they still are all born out of that origin thought of worthlessness, of poverty, of generational trauma that can hold us stuck in mental circles. Yeah. He says, because you thereby create the nucleus, which attracts to itself its own. You create the mental equivalent, which then attracts everything like that. I'm just trying to help. I know y'all understood it, but frankly, I'm saying it for my own benefit. In due order, until the finished work is manifested on the material plane. So this is going on inside of you all the time. You set it off, and it's just the mechanical process that continues until you interrupt it. And that's why we're here today. We're interrupting processes that no longer serve us. So the moment we come to ourselves and we like, how I get in this forest? This is not to spend a lot of time investigating. All you need to know is, I don't want this. And then you turn to, do you see, though, how you could spend years in the forest trying to figure out, now, how'd this plant grow? What is it that's continuing to grow this plant? The message would be to get yourself out of the forest. If that's not your forest, get ye out of it. Yes. This is the roll away the stone activity. All right, so look. We have, for years, I have shared with you this James Baldwin quote, that any real change, and what is change but a new commitment, an engagement, he says, implies the breakup of the world. So you're living a life in the forest. You in the forest, right? You don't like the forest. Well, there might be aspects of it you like. You like the shade about it, but you don't like the smell of it. You know what I mean? You got a whole list of the parts you don't like. And you wish that that was not the case. So you decide to shift. But look here, James Baldwin is telling you that the moment you do that, it's going to, your world as you know it, is going to crumble. Yes. It will represent the loss of all that formed your identity. That's what he's saying. Because in that forest, you had to be so-and-so in order to be in that forest. I don't know if you guys are understanding me. You had to not be you, the real you, the authentic you, the love that love created you. You couldn't be that to live where you don't belong. The people at home. We got it, right? You understand? Because these people, I don't know. So look, you and me, here we go. That in order to hang out where you know in your heart of heart you do not belong, you have to not be you. Because if you'd leave. You'd take off the grave clothes, you'd wake up and say, this ain't my forest. And you'd take off, because you wouldn't be wanting to wear your old forest clothes to your new garden. So you'd strip down, you'd be like, no, I got to get to the authentic me. Yes. And off you'd go, because you know that that's not for you. So, but look. And so when this is challenging. Making this change challenges everything, your sense of who you think you are. And it also appears to be the end of your safety. Oh, see, there's some listeners. Okay, folks at home, you're helping them here. Because there's some folks in here who heard it. That it appears to be the end of your safety, because that forest you didn't even like, that you knew you didn't have no business in that forest, but you made up that it was keeping you safe. When what it was really doing is deterring you from your highest and best. It was providing you a place to hide out. And your excuse is, I'm working on the forest. I can't transform all that I'm here. I can't be the love that I'm to be because I'm here in the forest. Y'all see, I got forestation to do. Yeah. Look. In Luke 21, it lays it out for you. It lays it out for you. It says, when you make the change that you're going to have to make, that you're here to be and do and what? Behave. Behave. Look. It says, but ye shall be delivered up even by parents and brethren and kinfolks and friends, and some of you shall they cause to be put to death. That's right. Y'all don't speak Bible. It means it ain't gonna be easy. All that taking off the clothes and walking out the forest, they're gonna catch you at the edge. The people you least expected to do you are gonna meet you right there and tell you about you. The you that was willing to be in the forest. And you may even die. But what did Amon tell you? Won't be the first time. You done died a lot of deaths. Deaths of betrayal and grief and whatever diagnoses you were given. We've all come back from the dead. We are all resurrected. And will need to be time and time again. So Luke is telling you, okay, go on, change. But just be ready. Be ready. And ye shall be hated by all people. Because what? You are doing what humanity is afraid to do. So humanity is not going to greet you with just, yay you, look at you coming out the forest all new. It's going to start with what? Very familiar to all of us. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Leaving that forest? We were counting on you. You send us forestry. What are we going to do now? If you don't get back. Yes. But look, all that is happening. As bad as it gets, what does verse 17, I'm sorry, 18 say? And not a hair of your head shall perish. So you're going to go through it, but don't worry about it, baby. Trust love. Trust love. You're going to go through it. And this won't be the first time or the last time you're going to go through it. But not a hair on your head will perish while you handle your appropriate business, your authentic business. Now, here's the thing. That forest is for somebody. That's somebody's vision. That's somebody's authentic being. But it wasn't yours. And the reason we know that is because your vibration was a little squirrely while there, yes? So look, today I need to give you the rest of that James Baldwin quote, though. Because we've just been skimming off the top for dang near a decade now. So look, the rest of it he says is, and at such a moment, in that moment where you're about real change, unable to see and not daring to imagine what the future will now bring forth, one clings to what one knew. The forest, right? The forest is over here, y'all. Or dreamed that one possessed. Yet it is only when a human is able without bitterness or self-pity to surrender a dream he has long possessed that he is set free. He has set himself free. She has set herself free. They have set themselves free. For higher dreams, for greater privileges. We got work to do. It's an inner job. Come on, James Baldwin. Make it plain, right? Look, the short of it is you cannot be who you once were and also have a new life with new riches. You just can't. Impossibility. So look. Today's reading in 365 for Richer Living is entitled, In the Midst of Me. In the Midst of Me. is the light of my world. And I let that light shine. I'm not even going to read nothing else. I'm just, y'all read it on your own time. I just need you to have that headline. What is it? In the midst of me, the authentic me, is the light of my world, also known as love, that created me at my core. And I let that love shine. Now, the rest of it is good, but let's just meditate on that. On that, because that gives us a calling. So while you meditate on that, you can leave that slide up there for folks. I want you to know, I'm just going to share with you something that I have affirmed for years. And often when I affirm something over time, I end up rewriting it and adding to it. And so I'm giving you a work in progress that I'm just going to share with you. That, and this is born from A.K. Mozumdar's The Triumphant Spirit. Because I live in and love, I'm sorry, let me start again. Because I live in and as love, I believe in my divine destiny. Nothing else matters. My unconditional love and positive intention are now overcoming all seeming obstacles. My life is now being molded by my love, my purpose, and my faith. Fulfillment of my divine destiny is realized through me as I release all notions of how, when, or with whom my good will manifest. I fully allow my divine destiny to unfold in its most perfect order, form, and time. I know not a hair on my head can be harmed, as my divine destiny is being fulfilled. Now, although I have affirmed some version of this and declared it for decades, I haven't always remembered that truth. There have been those times, I'm going to call them times of need, when I just said, I'll just slide on into the cesspool. Be in the quicksand. Rather than pull out the affirmation. Or even remember that most, the shorter version, I have memorized. So I wouldn't want to leave you with the impression that having an affirmation is a shield. You're going to have to use it. You're going to have to believe it. You're going to have to get in there with it. Well, maybe y'all won't. I have. That's what I have found has been true for me. When we surrender and accept our divine destiny, I think it is then, this is my experience, that I can authentically, honestly declare, thank you for everything. I have no complaint whatsoever. We're going to bring that back and include that in our every Sunday affirmation. You know, for years we did. My sense is that in order for that to be realized, the pre-work for that is that we surrender and accept our divine destiny. That we know that whatever is happening now is not the thing. It's a thing for us to engage and make some decision about and choose. And, you know, it's our life, so we need to be engaged in it. But it ain't the thing. Your work with that may simply be to be, get thee behind me. You know I don't play. I mean, you got to talk to your stuff like it's your stuff. Not like you, it's stuff. You better shut up. Unless you want to continue hearing it. Living authentically in this consciousness of thank you for everything. I have no complaint whatsoever requires strength. It requires courage. It requires wisdom. Yes. This is our work to do. This is ours to be. This is where I remind you that no one is coming to roll away your stone. Amen. That there's no stylist who's going to get you out of those grave clothes. That this is all an inside job. And it requires of you whatever it requires of you to rise up, to get out of those grave clothes, to roll away the stone that is blocking your good, your authentic living of life. And I know for sure that once you embrace the strength, the courage, the wisdom, you're good to go, baby. Good to go. I bring you to Kia Franklin, Thomas Hughes, and Brother Rainwright.
Inside my head there lives a dream that I want to see in the sun. Behind my eyes there lives a me that I've been hiding for much too long. Cause I've been too afraid to make a choice, cause I'm scared of the judgment that may follow. Always putting off my living for tomorrow. But on faith, time to show my face. It's been elusive for so long. But freedom is mine today. I gotta step out on faith. It's time to show my face. Procrastination had me bound. But look what I have found. I found strength, courage, and wisdom. It's been inside of me all along. Strength, courage, and wisdom inside of me. Whoa, whoa. Behind my pride there lives a me that knows humility. And in my heart there is a voice, and in my soul there is a voice. But I've been too afraid to make a choice, cause I'm scared of the things that I might be missing. Running too fast to stop to listen. Step out on faith, time to show my face. It's been elusive for so long, but freedom is mine today. I gotta step out on faith, time to show my face. Procrastination had me down. But look what I have found. I found strength, courage, and wisdom it's been inside of me all along. Now I've found strength, courage, and wisdom inside of me. Oh, I close my eyes and I think of all the things that I want to see. Now that I've opened my heart, I know that everything I want can be. So let it be, so let it be, so let it be. Oh, let it be, so let it be. I'm gonna let it be, so let it be. So let it be, yeah. Strength, courage, and wisdom, it's been inside of me all along. Now I found strength, courage, and wisdom inside of me.